You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 11th, 2020. And we're starting over, folks. Episode one. We got to do it all over again.
Rolling back. I wonder if a podcast has ever done that. Where
starting at episode one?
Yeah. Well, like,
listen, we fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. Nope. We're going to retitle this. Welcome back, everybody, to the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alborn.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And regrets? We got a few.
Ugh, they pile up, you know? At our age, dime a dozen.
We're going to talk about an article that Nicole Carpenter wrote on Polygon. It's called I'm Reckoning with My Save Scumming Ways. And it's about save scumming, the concept of rolling back to another save to correct what you think is an error that you made in a game.
What is the etymology of save scum? Is scum like a term, or is this a pejorative?
I thought it was a pejorative, but that's a good, I don't know. That's a good question, actually. I think of save scumming in a very, almost like a technical sense where like you are trying to, you know, manually save a bunch of different files so you can like, you know, it's not, you're not really meant to do it, but hey, in this, you know, this Command and Conquer scenario or whatever, I'm going to just like F5 a bunch of times, or in XCOM or something. I'm going to try to like roll back because I got a bad roll and the odds didn't go my way. I'm not really supposed to do this. So, you know, I have to kind of do a workaround and like maybe side load a different file or something. Like that's kind of how I think about it in my head, but I don't know where I got that idea.
Like save scumming in order to get around the limitations of RNG.
Yeah. Or yeah. I mean, RNG or basically, I guess actually this is probably where we start. I mean, in my mind, RNG definitely, because you feel like it's not fair. But the thing you feel that isn't fair, or the thing you don't want to live with, is the consequence.
Yeah, I want my thing that I said I wanted.
Right. Yeah. But I think that also applies to, you know, whoops, I pressed accept versus decline this quest, and now the game is going to go off in this whole other direction, and it was my fault. I just don't want the consequence, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a little bit different than the RNG one, right? Where it's like, because you, let's say shiny Pokemon, right? Mm-hmm. Or there are certain games where there's a certain chance that you will encounter something and it'll be like the rare thing, you know? Oh, yeah. So people can save scum and have save scummed in order to load the save over and over and over again, continually open the door or the box or the Pokeball or what have you until they get the version of that thing that they want. Where normally it's meant to be like a surprise and delightful moment, they're just sort of min-maxing it by loading the save and re-rolling the RNG dice.
Right. So maybe there is a meaningful distinction there where it's, you know, there's the fighting against randomness versus fighting against your own potential failings.
Yes, exactly right. Because fighting with let's say to beat randomness, that's like, okay, fine, whatever. That's not that bad, right?
I mean, like, I would almost say that is worse than the alternative.
Really?
Because the randomness is an inherent part of the game where I could argue that my mistake of pressing the A button versus the B button is more of a like, I'm not undermining the game. I'm trying to correct an error that I made versus trying to undermine the rules of the game.
But let's say it's like a grindy thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like you could find this special pony in the world, Ponyta, mm-hmm. but your special Ponyta can only be discovered in one out of 500 Ponytas. Uh-huh. And what the game wants you to do is fucking grind.
Yeah.
The content is in there. And in fact, they want you to have it, but they want to make you invest a bunch of grinding time to get there, to sort of artificially make it feel as though you earned it when really it's just pure luck. At that point, it's like, really? You fucking over the system in order to get your Ponyta feels like that's okay. You know what I mean? You're cheating a system that's already unfair. You're just cheating back, you know?
Oh, man. This is such a... I mean, the line here is... There is a line somewhere. It's one of those things.
I don't know where it is.
But I mean, there has to be, because then if you take that to its logical conclusion, what you then have is basically a clicker game where it's like, yeah, there is no, There are no rules. Yes. The numbers go up as long as you press this button. Well, the numbers will continue to go up, you know?
I'm okay with someone save scumming in order to beat RNG to get something special to avoid the grind. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you have to save scum to avoid the grind, you're already losing. You know, you've already lost to the unethical system because now you're just wasting a different kind of time in order to artificially get that thing that you want.
So, well, let's maybe examples will help. So, like in the article, Nicole talks about a funny Red Dead Redemption 2 scenario where a stranger jumps on the horse that she had and loved and raised from a young filly and just runs away with it. Mm-hmm. And then she decides, fuck this. That was my horse. I'm going to reload a save and never talk to the stranger ever again. So what is that scenario? Is that random that NPC was going to do it? Is that her bad for trusting humanity? Like what is this situation?
That's a tough question, Scott. Okay. I'm divided here. I'm just going to think out loud, which is basically what this podcast is. Anyway, two thought processes, right? Okay. One is fuck the game for doing that because it's unfair, right? Like they reward you for investing time into this horse. It's a beautiful horse. They want you to feel rewarded and then they take it from you with no sort of warning. It's like you can't, a meaningful decision cannot be made in this scenario if you didn't know that the horse was at risk, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not something like you're deciding to risk your life by going back into a burning building and saving someone, right? That's a meaningful decision. And if you die trying to do this heroic act, you died heroically. But you just spontaneously combusting, like that's not a heroic act, you know? Like I don't think that there's necessarily anything lost in terms of it being meaningful from this case. Right. That's one thought. But the other thought is, but that's partly the point of Red Dead, right? Which is random shitty things happen out where it's wild. And maybe you should distrust people because you will get into scenarios that were unintended.
Yeah. I mean, the emergent gameplay is kind of the point of that game. And so when something emergent happens, like,
it's her own horse. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I mean, I'm not faulting her. I'm trying to, again, there is a line there somewhere and I'm trying to figure it out because that was one of the few things that I really liked about that game where every once in a while I would be wandering around and just a fucking cougar would attack me, you know? It's kind of the Far Cry 2 ethos of video games, you know, just sometimes bad shit happens. And so then what is it incumbent? Maybe here's a scenario. Is it incumbent on the game to set up some modeling of those consequences early on in the game? So you kind of know the stakes, you know,
I would definitely feel better about it. Like, let's say earlier in the game, there's a quest where you meet a stranger and they like steal your horse, but then they turn around and they're just like, just Josh and you, I just wanted to teach you a friendly lesson about letting strangers get on your horse. You know, like maybe a scenario like that.
And then you shoot that person in the face.
Right. Oh, Bob, the fake horse thief really taught me a valuable lesson. I'm going to think twice next time. Right. Right? Where it's like, okay, look, you chose to do that. That's on you, you know?
Yeah. So then you have some sort of like dry run of the lesson before there's harsher consequences to it.
Right. I mean, but then, you know, to be honest, like, another part of me is just this curmudgeon old asshole who's like, well, life's unfair. Get over it, you know? Like, sometimes people are just going to jack your horse, you know? Like, look, how many of us have gotten, like, their car broken into? It's not like, sometimes it's not that you parked your car in a sketchy neighborhood. Like, you just got unlucky, dude. You know?
There wasn't anything to, there was no, it wasn't your fault in any way, and yet it still happened.
But then on the other hand, I'm imagining poor Nicole Carpenter gets carjacked in real life, and I was like, oh, well, at least I can go home to Red Dead, where it's a fictional universe, and I'm the hero. Like, that sounds awful, right? Like, come on. Okay, let me take an example of something that I think is flagrantly across the line, which is what I'm calling the having your cake and eating it too scenario, right? Okay. And the best case examples I can think of are things like Mass Effect or Persona or Stardew Valley. Mm-hmm. Especially games when there's romance options, okay. where you make a save before a pivotal moment so that you can experience both moments and then decide which one is the best one.
Oh.
I feel like that is very clearly crossing the line.
Right. Because, I mean, that, to me, that is more, that is the kind of save, that's the scum in save scum.
That is the, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
The wretched hive of save scum and villainy.
Why is it over the line in your thinking?
Well, my thought is this, right? Part of the challenge of making a decision is knowing that maybe the grass was greener on the other side, or in the case of, say, Mass Effect is a great one, because that's one where certain decisions can result in certain of your crew members dying, right? Mm-hmm. And I distinctly remember knowing, well, I could look this up and see what the optimal way is of saving everybody, or I can let some people die. And I could totally understand why some people would save, do their decisions, and then change their mind and reload the save to resave people, right? Because those characters are super interesting. But I would argue that the meaningful loss of people when you make that decision is really important. And then to go into that, like, let's say you're going into a scenario where you save everybody's life. Mm-hmm. If you go into that knowing that you have made it so that no one's life is at risk, then that path has already lost meaning. Like, it's negligent to say, well, I'll just experience both and therefore I'll have the best of both worlds, because I would argue by experiencing both, you are experiencing neither. You're experiencing some whole other thing, which is omniscience.
Right. And as you know, now that you're fully into season 3 of TNG, omniscience is boring. Q gets bored, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, hey, that's a compelling point. Exactly right.
I mean, I think the other thing that that model of game is really susceptible to save scumming, and the damages of save scumming, is that it also shows you the holes in the structure of that game, where that game really works well if you immerse yourself in the linear narrative. But the moment you start poking at the edges, you start to see, oh, I could basically be an asshole and still save the world anyway, or still romance this person. Yep. Like, once you basically break role playing, you start to see the mechanics of it, which makes it maybe feel a little bit less cohesive or special, because you know how easy it is to swing one way or the other.
100% agreed. Yeah. I mean, this is especially true of save scumming to see the outcomes of dialogue choices, because oftentimes, spoiler alert, the outcomes are exactly the same.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, this is actually where I would shout out games like Mass Effect, or maybe even better would be something like Dragon Age Inquisition, where the choices that you make at certain points in the game will play out or have consequences much, much, much later in the game. So by the time that you realize that you have set that path, maybe you saved someone's life earlier and in another version they died, or you know, maybe even something as simple as choosing your race may affect how people see you later on in the game in certain scenarios. If you want to save scum, you have to save scum so far back that you're basically replaying 40 hours of a game, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is a really smart deterrent and a way to make it feel as though your decisions are meaningful in the sort of long run of that experience.
I haven't played the game, and she doesn't mention it in her column, but she mentions a game called Yes, Your Grace that is kind of changing her mind around save scumming. And I think it sounds like the scenario that you described, where there are some decisions or events that in the moment were unexpected or unwanted, but the game is giving her a sense that they will have ramifications so far into the game and later that it would be kind of cheating yourself to not see how it plays out. And so there is a timing aspect to it where save scumming would lessen the entertainment of seeing how something unfolded.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but at the same time, I almost think that the reason why people save scum is because games are so long. Like, imagine if a game only took an hour to play and it didn't matter if you made a decision that you weren't completely happy with because the investment was just one more hour, you know?
Yep. I mean, what's another good example? So there are games like basically anything from Arkane Studios. So all of the Dishonored games, is a good example. What's another good one? Maybe like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, like that old game. These are games where the chaos that is capable in those games runs along a knife's edge. And if you mess up, you can trigger a cascading failure,
right?
Where like what unfolds isn't just like fundamental story elements, but like just the chaos of battle that could itself, recovering from that, be a very long and arduous process.
Yeah.
So there were certainly times where quick saving was the best decision you can make if you wanted to do something stealthily so that you can quickly reload a moment where you hadn't triggered the alarm. Oh, you know what's an even better example? What is it? Is it Human Evolution? Is it Deus Ex?
Yeah, Deus Ex.
Right. So Deus Ex is a game where I played it on PC, but I was not quick saving in order to reload from fail states, usually stealth fail states.
Yeah.
Which is technically save scumming. Yeah. And the game was extremely difficult, and I found it really unsatisfying. And someone mentioned to me that if I quicksaved more often, it would be more satisfying so that when I reach those fail states, I'm not forced to go tread a lot more combat and sort of trudge through that. It certainly made it easier, and it certainly made it more, it made it more likely for me to quick load some of those saves.
Yeah.
And I think in those scenarios, I don't know, like that's more of a gray area again, right? Because part of the joy of going through an entire section stealthily in Dishonored is to see the craftsmanship of the game itself, right? Mm-hmm. Or to put yourself in a scenario where you can, it's almost like the way you might build a complex tower of cards, right? Mm-hmm. What you want to see is the completely built tower. And so if there's a way to save, you know, piling up the cards so you don't have to do it every time, it's going to be much more easy for you to be able to see that tower and get that level of satisfaction from it. You know, I don't think it would disparage anybody in Dishonored. I mean, certainly I think so much fun of that game is letting the chaos unfold.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to have like a completely stealthy run through and see what that was like, I would not disparage anybody from quick saving and quick loading whenever they find themselves in a fail state.
I think the difference there is it's a more traditional model of a game where there's a level, there are things that are going to happen, but there's less... like in the Red Dead example, you know, that horse is gone and it's going to be really hard to like get that horse back.
Buy another horse. Yeah.
Where it's like in Dishonored, you will fail out of the level, but then you're basically just restarting. There's not this meta element of, it'd be different if you failed and, you know, your blade fell into the water and then whoops, you just don't have a blade anymore, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is the way that some hardcore games work.
I mean, there are for sure like old hardcore RPGs where you die and you just wake up in a fucking dungeon somewhere.
Yeah, and you do lose that progress. It's part of the story that you've lost that progress. But I think I agree with you where I understand it a little bit more if it's a more level based kind of just straight up challenge based game where, you know, fine, maybe you don't want to do the whole level over and over again, even if that was the kind of designed intent.
Yep.
You're not really losing anything from like a meta game perspective. I feel like the roguelike trend has brought this into relief a lot.
Yeah.
Even something like the From Software games, where there have definitely been times in Dark Souls where I just fucked up and used an item in a way that I shouldn't have used it, and now I can no longer get this epic sword that I that requires that item, and I just I just chomped it for souls and I was like, whoops, oh boy, like there it goes, and there really isn't a way to roll back in that game, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing is autosaves have basically made a lot of this moot.
Right.
You know? Where like, oh, once you've triggered that save, your save file is overridden. You can hard save, right? Like, I know some people do that. I wish I had done that with something like Bloodborne, where once you defeat a boss, you cannot fight that boss solo again.
Right.
So some people will save, fight a boss, and then quit out before it saves, and then that way they can continue to fight that boss again, you know? Which is kind of an interesting way of like getting around the limitation of auto saving, but
right.
The other example I was thinking of is something like Fire Emblem, because I've been playing Fire Emblem Three Houses recently. Mm-hmm. And I had played one of the old Fire Emblems, Fire Emblem Twin Swords, Link's Awakening, whatever, one of those fucking old ones.
Well, if it's Three Houses, then it had to be Twin Swords last time. This is going in linear fashion.
I assume so. So I played the other Fire Emblems, and one of the ways that you can choose to play is with permadeath. And whenever a character dies, you lose them forever, and that's that. And I found myself save scumming sometimes, but trying to just get through it in a sort of like Nuzlocke run style. But yeah, I was so unfamiliar with the series that I found myself really struggling, and there'd be times where I would lose a bunch of people and then was like, well, this is kind of pointless. I can trudge on, but I've just lost half the people that are supposed to be main characters because I'm just ill-equipped at this game, right? That the real Byleth in Fire Emblem Three Houses doesn't suck as much as I do when I'm playing Fire Emblem, right? That's not the story that they're trying to tell. So in Three Houses, one of the settings is permadeath, but it kind of defaults to, I think it's called normal mode. It might be called the casual mode or something like that.
For normies.
Yeah, for normies. But it's basically the mode where if one of the characters dies, then they just come back at the end of the battle. They revive. As long as you win, it's fine. There is no permadeath in the game. Which feels really weird because I know so much of the lineage of Fire Emblem is this permadeath mode. And they want you to take it seriously. And they want you to think about those repercussions. So for the first time I had a character die in Fire Emblem, and I had a lot of mixed emotions because part of me wanted the old mode where it was permadeath and I would be forced to be put in a situation where I go like, should I save scum or not?
Right.
On the other hand, it still felt like an unfair death. Like it was just a sort of one shot out of nowhere that I didn't really predict. And maybe again, I'm just bad. but I was thankful that there was this mode that I could play in that didn't, you know, wasn't so punishing and I wasn't forced to save scum it. But there's certainly a part of me that thinks the mode that I'm playing in now is sort of like, you know, a officially recognized form of save scumming.
Yeah, that because they've given you the an explicit option versus just you going into a menu and reloading it.
Right. I mean, in a way, they've basically said, hey, look, it's okay. Like, we know that people have been doing this for years on all of these Fire Emblem games.
Right.
Because, you know, the games can be hard and characters that you love and find interesting can die. And so we are recognizing that and giving you a mode that lets you automatically save them without you having to go through any sort of trickery. Right.
Right.
That's an interesting take because from a designer's perspective, it's like they're saying, hey, yeah, you know what? Like, whatever. We get it. Why some people play this game is to meet these characters and like them, and the combat is actually the least interesting part.
Yeah, yeah. I think the rise of the tacitly endorsed or the recognized, or even just the partial, there's... remember when we were playing Into the Breach a couple of years ago where there is... You can use once per battle a rewind feature where it's basically boy, like it's you know, you basically have one quick save per match, but it's in canon. You can only use it once. So it's not, you know, it's managed save scumming and it's justified within the battle and the fiction of the universe.
Yep.
And it's that way of splitting the difference where it's like, we're not going to let you go into the file and hard save yourself and reload it. But we're also not going to just punish you for making a mistake or, you know, wanting to try something different. So, like, I think there is, I think there is this rise of almost people being met in the middle with some of that stuff.
I mean, so Fire Emblem Three Houses has the exact same mechanic. I believe two or three times in a battle, you can rewind and you could rewind a good deal. And it actually shows you your saves, like this action happened, then this action, then this action.
So it's not just one turn. You can actually go, you can time machine it kind of.
Exactly. Like you can go back to where you believe that you made that mistake. And I think going back to the horse conversation, that's kind of the point, right? Because I think one of the feelings that causes people to want to save scum in the first place is a feeling like a decision, something occurred with a limited amount of information. And now that I have the information, I want to make the right decision, right? Like I want to feel as though I can learn and apply what I've learned. And both Fire Emblem and Into the Breach let you learn from your mistake right away. Like, how often in Into the Breach did you rewind and then you never had to rewind again, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you faced some crazy challenge. It's that you made one important mistake or you forgot that this enemy did a particular action. And the moment you realized that they can, you didn't forget that lesson again, right? You applied that lesson throughout the rest of the match and you found your way towards victory. Or you made some other horrible mistake like me and you died, right? Which is fine. In the case of the horse, I think the idea is I didn't even know that this game was capable of straight up jacking my horse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And now that I know that that is even feasible, of course I don't want to talk to random fucking people on the street who might kidnap my horse, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the stakes of a game that is dozens and dozens of hours long, and several of those hours could be getting this thing that could then be taken away in one instant, doesn't really... I could see how some people find that to be an unfair bargain or an unfair terms by which you're agreeing to play the game. Whereas something like Fire Emblem that gives you a little bit of leeway, or Into the Breach, where even if you fail out completely, the cost of doing that to get back into another game is relatively low. Whereas if I lose my horse in hour 30 of Red Dead Redemption, there's no fixing that, you know, and starting over is not a valid fix for that because no one's going to invest another 30 hours. Whereas if I fuck up in Spelunky, it's like a very quick start back to the beginning and I can get that shotgun again.
How much do you think this is? I mean, not to be insulting about it, but this is kind of like a training wheels thing, right? Because all that being said, I'm totally fine with saves coming, but there's also a part of me that's like, I think we all just need to get a little bit more comfortable with losing things in games, you know? Like,
well, this is our minimalist aesthetic, you know? I think both you and I are fully in the KonMari camp, and it's like, it's just a horse.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it is, you know? Or, like, if you remember that time I did that Nuzlocke run of Pokemon, right? Mm-hmm. I never thought I was going to finish Pokemon when I made this Nuzlocke run. Mm-hmm. But it felt really empowering going into it, knowing that when my Pokemon died, and I released them into the wild, they were gone forever. Mm-hmm. Gone. Nothing I could do about it, right?
Yeah.
And it felt, in a way, as though my hands were untied because all of my decisions sort of... I knew where I was headed, right? I was headed towards failure. And the question was, when am I going to have the critical failure? So all of the smaller failures of, like, losing a Pokemon here or there...
Right.
Felt fine and it felt calming in a way that was more freeing when I'm actually playing the normal game and a Pokemon I'm trying to catch gets away when I throw the Pokeball, right? Like, I think sometimes practicing that loss in that digital space is really good. So, you know, a non-video game example, I run a bunch of D&D campaigns for people. I've been running some for coworkers. I also really like to run this RPG called Paranoia. And one of the reasons is because in Paranoia, you get 9 clones and you die a lot. And the whole point, from my perspective, is to get people comfortable with the sort of old school role-playing game mentality that it's okay if your character dies, you know?
Right.
There was an era where your D&D character was not expected to tell this crazy arc where you go and battle the gods. You expected to fight and live a violent, brutal life, be a hero, go out in a blaze of glory, or because you missed a pit trap, and then you reroll another character. And that's a very, you know, it's OSR, it's old school RPG for a reason. There's a certain mentality that I think it's still alive and well. There's a vibrant community there, but we're also in an era where D&D is now more popular than ever, and I think there's a lot of young role players who aren't familiar with this sort of more old school way of playing. And I think for me, I really like playing in both venues. I like the idea a lot that sometimes you might lose everything, and that's okay.
Right. You know? Well, and that's, I think it's, I also agree. This also could be like the old man talking, but there's so very, very few safe spaces to truly fail spectacularly in life.
Yep.
And it is, to me, it's gotten more fun over the years to put those self-imposed limits of, I'm just never going to reload a save. I'm just going to keep going. I'm playing Death Stranding, and no matter what, I'll fuck up every boot that I have, but I'm just going to keep going, you know? And it wasn't always like that. And I don't know what changed in me or what changed in video games, but I think there is something freeing to being able to experiment and have that pressure, but also not have to really truly worry about the ramifications of it. And also just for me, it feels more creative in a weird way where, you know, there are sometimes I remember finishing RPGs where I had this stockpile of items where I might need it someday. I really might need this elixir and I'm never going to use it. I just am afraid that I'll need it in a wild time. But knowing that there is no fixing a problem kind of frees me to actually experiment with the mechanics of the game because I know I'm not going to go and fix it from a metagame perspective. So I have to use all my tools inside the game. And yeah. So I agree. Like I have become more inclined towards that position the longer I've played games because it's just such a rare thing to be able to truly experiment without grievous consequences.
Yeah. You know, and I think that there's ways to design towards that. And I think Breath of the Wild, which comes up all the time on the show, yep. I know, but the fact that even the best weapons degrade over time, you're going to lose them, right?
Yep.
And that means that there are times when you use them, it doesn't really matter a whole lot what you're using it on. You could be fighting a small little hobgoblin, and you could be fighting like a crazy centaur man, right?
Yeah.
And I remember going to your house and watching you play, and you were like decked out. You had all kinds of crazy shit. And I was like, I am still whacking things with sticks and stuff, but I still beat the game. It still felt empowering. Like there were still times when, you know, I would lose a crazy awesome weapon and then have to just pick something up and improvise. Yeah. And designing for that, like designing to know that sometimes there will be a moment of critical failure where your weapon drops and you have to come up with another ingenuitive way of overcoming the challenge.
Yep.
I think does a very good job of encouraging inventive play and creative play per your point. And it's just built right into the game design.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I've been taking a long time to finish this game, but I'll say like one last thing. I was thinking a lot about it when it comes to Kentucky Route Zero because there's so many little dialogue choices and there are definitely times where I will say something and I immediately regret it or I immediately, oh no, this person misinterpreted this. And so I think there is just... There are more and more of those types of game experiences out there that I'm more willing to just let the chips fall where they may. And then I get to compare it with other people that have played it or with you, you know, where what actually happened. And if I save scum it, I know a little bit more, but I don't get to have the discovery of the discussion about it.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Okay, I guess we'll leave it there for now. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. I guess we won't start over. You can still listen to those old episodes. They're out there.
They're out there for better or worse. We're gonna keep going.
You can find us wherever you find podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify.
Cool. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.